Well, good morning. Good to see y'all here this morning. It's a good day. I'm a great day, but I can't believe it's already the 28th of August. You know, we started this this summer series, and we said there's 15 weeks, 15 Sundays between Memorial Day and Labor Day. And when you hear 15 weeks, you think, oh man, that just goes on and on. Just goes on and on. But here it is already the 14th week of those 15 weeks. And so the summer does, you know, time does go faster in the summertime. That's just a given. It speeds up somehow and it goes quick. But it's good to be here together. As you know, if you've been here this summer, we're going through a series from a passage in the book of Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament. And it's a list of things, a list of partner phrases, things that happen in life or that we do in life or that occur to us in life. And we've been looking at those one after the other. You know, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to laugh, a time to cry. All those couples we've gone through and kind of the system we've been looking at is that this is how to live well in a broken world. That this is what happens, and it helps us understand what happens to us. And so today we're down to the next to the last one, and it's a time to love and a time to hate. I thought I could make the shortest message that probably had ever been spoken here. I could just say, love all the time and don't be a hater. And we can all go home. But it says there's a time to love and a time to hate, and so we're gonna look at that today and see what God can show us through His Word about that. And so I hope you'll go along with me as we go through this. Father, let's just pray. Father, thank you that for Your Word that speaks to us. Thank you that this was written a long time ago and it still makes sense today. And I pray that we would make sense of it as we look at it together. And help us to be open to what you might want to say to us, each of us individually, today through your words, through the words that are written for our instruction and for our direction. Thank you that you didn't leave us without a guide, but you gave us a guide in this world, in your word. Amen. So, time to love. Time to love. Love is a word that we use a lot, that you hear a lot about. Songs written about it, books written about it. Love is a feeling of strong connection or strong affection. It's something that causes us to highly value someone or even something. And we tend to put that even before ourselves. If it's true love, it goes before ourselves. We prioritize that person. We look out for their interests. It's something that causes us to do things we wouldn't otherwise do. You know, you hear about engaged couples and they live far apart. And they drive hundreds of miles for a few hours together because of their love, because of that desire to be together and that they value that time so much. But it's kind of a funny word in that we use the same word to describe our affection for our children or our spouse or our parents, the same word that we use to describe our affection for a hamburger, you know? I mean, I love a good burger, right? We use that word all the time. All the time. And yet, we reserve it. When we speak of it with in relationship to people, it's something special. It's something that we don't take lightly. We don't say lightly. C.S. Lewis, an author, he defined love as this. He says, love is not affectionate feeling, but a steady wish for the loved person's ultimate good as far as it can be obtained. a steady wish for the loved person's ultimate good. And I really like that definition because it's a steady desire for that other person's good, as much as it depends on you. It's that love. But you know, oftentimes love in our culture is kind of described as kind of a random thing. I just fell in love. I think Einstein claimed gravity had nothing to do with love. But we fall in love, or love comes and it goes, and it's kind of a mysterious thing. And it is. It is. As you try to describe or try to define love, it is mysterious. But it is sometimes made to appear to be an involuntary reaction to certain circumstances. And yet there's choice in love, isn't there? You choose, oftentimes, who and how and what you love. There's choice involved. And so it's not necessarily just kind of this random emotion that drifts in and out of our experience. According to the Bible, love originates with God. It says we love because God first loved us. So it starts with Him, that He is the originator. In fact, there's a verse that said God is love, that defines Him. That His desire, He has a constant wish for our good. That's His desire, His constant desire. So it's pretty clear, I think, that there's a time to love. You know, that's not something probably that would be debatable. We all want to love and be loved. And there's a time, a lot of times for that, right? I mean, it's not a unique place that comes once in a while, but it's something that we desire. And in fact, as Christians, if you've entered into a relationship with God where you've accepted what He's presented or made available to you, it should even define us. We should be typified by love. In Matthew 22, verse 37, there's a place some people were talking to Jesus. Jesus was ministering on earth, and these teachers and people were asking Him questions. And someone asked Him, Jesus, what's the most important commandment? They had a lot of commandments. And they said, what's the most important commandment? And Jesus said, the most important is love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. He said, that's the first one. The most important one is love God. And He said, and the second one's like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. And so Jesus was saying he boiled down all the commands that God might have for us into those two as being the primary, the ones that we should give most attention to and consider most importantly. And so as followers of Jesus, that is what should typify us. That's what Jesus said. This is what should denote you. This is what should describe you as a follower of mine, is that you love others and you love God. And so that there's a time to love. Now, there's another verse that is a little bit almost unsettling. And again, Jesus was speaking to folks, and this is recorded in Luke 6. And He said he was speaking to people, and He said, but those of you that are listening, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Now, wait a minute. There's a time to love, I get that. And the time to hate, that's those my enemies, right? But right here, Jesus takes that off the table. That hardly seems fair. Like, He says, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Not even a mental, I'll love them while I undermine them. But it says, do good for them, those that hate you. These are hard verses. I read these verses, and it goes on. These verses go on about how to treat those people. Lend to them. You know, give to them. It's like, really? to the people that don't like me and that I don't like? I don't get that. So as far as a time to hate, Jesus takes our enemies off the table. So love is pretty straightforward. We're to be typified and described by love. But hate, what's the place of that? Where does that go? And so a time to hate. Let's talk about that a minute. Hate is a word, again, that gets used for all sorts of things. You can hate Brussels sprouts, maybe, or anchovies on your pizza, or you can hate your neighbor, the guy living next door. Those are two very different situations, very different. It's a feeling of intense or passionate dislike. Hostility, you despise, you're disgusted by. And like I said, sometimes it's used to describe things we simply don't like. You know, I hate Brussels sprouts. I like Brussels sprouts if they're prepared appropriately. But some don't like them. But anyway, we can use that term as I hate this, or I hate winter, or I hate summer. You know, we use that term pretty loosely. But when it comes to other ways, when it's applied to people, it has a much darker meaning. If we say we hate a person, or we have that feeling of hostility towards another person, that creates some ugly feelings. In our world, it creates a lot of terrible things. There's hate crimes. There's hate speech. There's hate, and it's not good. And it's the root of many things, terrible things that happen. And in fact, some folks, unfortunately, when they think of Christians, people that claim to follow Jesus, some folks perceive them as by what they hate and who they hate. And that is so sad to me, to think that the folks that are following a man that said, following the God of the universe, who said, love me first and then love your neighbor as yourself, that those people, that we would be described by what we hate. And that's unfortunate. And it's not right. And that's not, I don't believe that's God's intention. So, time to hate. When is that? When is the time to hate? I came upon this verse, and it was very fortunate. Romans 12:9, it has the words love and hate in the same short little verse. But great, because I'm talking about a time to love and a time to hate. And here it says, Romans 12:9, love must be sincere. Hate what is evil, cling to what is good. Simple. Hate what is evil, cling to what is... It says, love must be sincere. This verse comes in the book. This man named Paul is writing to the Christians in Rome, and he's talking about how they ought to live and how they ought to submit themselves to God and how they ought to live together in love. And then, so then he says, love must be sincere. What does it mean to be... Love must be sincere. Sincere basically means to be consistent or true. That it would be genuine. Love must be genuine. It's without hypocrisy. In other words, it isn't two-faced, that it's pure love, that it's not wishy-washy, but it's pure, without hypocrisy. So it's love like in Matthew 22, love God first and love people. You know, the New Testament, well, Old Testament too, but the New Testament is full of admonitions of how we're to love us, love each other. We're to be devoted. In the next verse, Romans 12:10 says, devoted in brotherly love. In First Corinthians 13, there's a whole chapter about love is patient, love is kind, love is gentle, all those things, the way that love is supposed to be. In Galatians 5, it says to serve one another in love. In Ephesians, it says to bear with one another in love. In 1 Peter, it says your love should be sincere. You should love deeply from the heart. And in 1 John says, don't love just with words, but with in action and in truth. So we are called to love sincerely and genuinely, not putting it on. But it says this, then it says, love must be sincere. And in one translation says, hate, what, more accurately, the sentence goes on, hating what's evil and clinging to what's good. So that's part of that being sincere, is hating what's evil. So hate evil. Hate evil. One translation of that word hate in this verse is abhor. Abhor is a word, another word that is kind of like, ah, you know, you just abhor it, you just detest it. And I thought of example of what we might abhor and or what would be detestable. When I was young, a young single guy, there was a young woman in the church had a garden, a big garden, and she invited me to come help her dig potatoes. Has anybody ever dug potatoes? I had not before that time, and so you went to the garden. There's a couple long rows of potatoes. You use a pitchfork and you turn up the soil, and the potatoes are there and the dirt to be pulled out of the dirt. So we're going along, pulling up these potatoes, and some are big, and you kind of like treasure hunting, you know, you pull up, see what kind of potatoes you find. Well, somewhere along the line, I reached to grab a potato. It looked like all the rest, and it just collapsed in my hand, and it was a rotten potato. And it was filled with something that was a lot like what comes out of your nose when you have a bad cold. Has anybody ever done this? Am I the only one who's ever grabbed a rotten potato? The young lady that invited me to dig potatoes has. I eventually married her. But anyway, I grabbed that thing, and not only does it feel awful, but it smells terrible. And it's like, oh, I abhorred that potato. And it's just, ugh. And it almost makes you not want to dig any more potatoes because you might grab another one because they look a lot like the other potatoes. So you want to kind of poke at them, you know. Anyway, that's a picture to me of something that's abhorrent or detestable. It was just, and you just drop it. I mean, there's no, I think I'll take this home and look at it more closely. I mean, it's just something you just don't want anything to do with. And that's what it says about evil, that we should abhor or hate evil. And evil's a word when it isn't, in our culture, isn't broadly used. You don't often talk about something that's evil. When you hear the word evil, if you're like me, I think of awful things done to children or a mass murder. That's when you hear that word evil. It's not something we apply to the food we eat or, you know, an experience. Oh, that was evil, typically. That usually we reserve that word. But actually in the Bible, throughout the Old Testament, New Testament, the word is used very broadly. There's lots of words that are translated as evil. I guess as you look at all those different applications of that word, it really comes down to things that are contrary to God's intentions. There's in Mark 7:20, Jesus was talking to folks, and he was talking about what defiles and what spoils a person. And he said, for it's from within, out of a person's heart, that evil thoughts come. Sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance, and folly. All these evils come from inside and defile a person. So this is kind of a list of evils. This is not all-inclusive, but it kind of gives a broad sense of what they're referring to as evil. You know, sometimes we would not necessarily, in our experience, think, I was feeling a little greedy. Boy, that was evil. I think oftentimes we excuse a little greed. Or when we have that envious thought towards our neighbor or somebody that we work with, we think, man, wish I had what they had. Boy, that was an evil thought. We tend to kind of excuse those things. Well, it's not evil, really. Just kind of unseemly, what have you. But this is the sort of thing that's listed as evil. And so if I could kind of summarize evil as referenced in this, is anything that contradicts God's laws or his nature. And, the commands of God, there's the Ten Commandments, and there's lots of different commandments and directions. They can be in kind of two categories. How we interact with God is one category. And God insists that we honor him. He insists that we, like Jesus said, that you would love God first. You know, that you might think, gee, that's kind of God insists that we honor him. Well, he can do that. I can't do that as a man. That would be pretty presumptuous if I insisted that everyone honor me before everything else. I suppose there have been men like that in history, the Caesars and things, but God can do that because he's the creator of the universe. You know, he can insist on that honor, and he can call anything that detracts from that or discounts that, he can call that evil. Because he is supremely good, and anything that detracts from him is evil. So on this evil list, things that detract from our honoring God, anything that takes God out of the supreme place that he belongs, that's evil. And then there's laws about how we interact. A lot of these on this list are things about how we interact together. Things that they call evil here: sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit. All those things are kind of between people. And the reason that God calls those bad or evil is that it's not good for us. He knows that we do best and we live best if we don't do those things, if we're not greedy, if we're not envious, if we're not taking advantage of each other, if we're not lying to each other, if we're not killing each other. He knows that's best. You know, we often make up rules that are arbitrary. Some of our laws, humanly speaking, are arbitrary. They're just made up because of that's the way we want things to be. Or we personally have kind of our personal rules because of what I prefer, what bugs me, don't want you to do that. God is not arbitrary. God doesn't just make up rules like, tell these people not to lie. Tell these people. He's not arbitrary. He does these things for a reason, for our good, because he loves us. It's for our good. It's for all of our good. And it's for all his creatures' good. All of us, whether we follow him or not, he desires our good. They're based in his love for us. So these rules, these things that he calls evil, avoiding those, are based in his love for us. So anything that detracts or contradicts the holy nature of God, anything that demeans God's character or name, or is contrary to his good desire for his people, that's what's evil. That's what's evil. So we're to hate it. It says to hate evil, to hate those things, those influences. And sometimes those influences come from within. And sometimes those influences come from without. They may be thoughts that I have, greedy thoughts, envious thoughts, bitter thoughts, lustful thoughts, things that come into my mind. And if I am following this verse, I'm going to abhor them like a rotten potato. I'm not going to take that greedy thought and say, I think I'll kind of entertain this for a while. I think I'll kind of keep this in my pocket. I'll let it kind of simmer for a while. Rather dropping it like a hot potato. That's what I got from this verse. And there's things that come from without. There's philosophies and messages that we get from those around us, from the movies we watch, the television shows we see, the books we read, and those ideas may put, for instance, put man at the center of things, put human beings at the center of things, and God is just a creation of the human beings or something like that. But anything that puts God any place but first is evil. And we should recognize that and be alert. Oh, put that aside. Detest that. Hate that. And this was challenging to me. As I read this, I thought, man, I can be so nonchalant sometimes about the thoughts that are coming in or the ideas that are presented to me. And I can think, maybe it's okay to entertain those things, that thought. I was so challenged because it's so easy to not, I don't want to be a hater, you know? And it's so easy not to react or not to respond and put those things aside. We can be prone to tolerate things. But love must be sincere. Hate evil, cling to what is good. So in order for our love to be genuine, like it said, to be sincere, to be genuinely true, we have to hate what's evil and hold on to what's good. Because can you really love good if you don't hate evil? Think about that. Can you really love what's good if you don't hate the opposite of that? Can you really love what's good for your neighbor if you don't hate what's wrong for your neighbor? What hurts your neighbor? You think about a student. Say a student is determined to pull straight A's, really needs to buckle down and get the good grades, you know, really is committed to that. And yet there's things that could help that student accomplish that, and there's things that could detract and take away from that goal. So, for instance, a student might be having a big project coming up and needs to meet with their group, work group, and don't really feel like it, you know, kind of want to say, this crazy group meets on Saturday morning, I'm going to sleep in. They need to, in one sense, they need to detest sleeping in that day, you know. When it comes to going to class, there's other things you could do that are more fun than going to class. But you need to go to class. And can you really say you desire straight A's if you entertain skipping class? Not really. If you're a gardener and you're intent on some great and a beautiful garden, whether it be flowers or vegetables, you're really intent on a great garden. Can you say you really desire a great garden but tolerate the weeds? Not really. So to say we love good, but that we tolerate these things that detract from God's good name or our good relationships is not consistent. It's not sincere. It's not true. So how do we do this? You know, we could think, oh, well, you got to be negative all the time. Just, oh, can't think that, can't think that, can't think that. Oh, don't think that. Oh, that's bad. That's scary. You know, I don't think so, because it says cling to what is good. You know, focusing just on the negative and all the thing and be ready to tell everybody how much the things you abhor. You know, oh, man, I abhor all this stuff. You know, not particularly attractive to people. If you're constantly telling them what you abhor about the world and everything, but to cling to what's good, to desire what's good and right, that can be our desire. And so then you're pursuing good. It gets easier and easier to see the things that are detracting from it. We pursue good. There's a verse in Philippians 4:8. It's a great verse. It says, turn there. Is it up there? All right, great. I'm going to read it. It says, finally, brothers and sisters, It's talking to us. Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything's excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. That's pursuing those good things. Pursuing good. Resisting, hating, detesting evil. And it gets, like I said, it gets easier and easier as we pursue what's right and what's good. We begin to be able to recognize what detracts from that and hate what's evil. So the time to love, yes, we should be, and we should desire to be described by love. That the way we love God, the way we honor Him as our Maker, as our Lord, and the way we love each other, and the way we love our enemies, is that there's a time to love. And a time to hate, yes, to hate those things that detract, that keep us from those goals of love, that are contrary to that. That is God's desire, that we would be consistent, that our love would be sincere. The degree to which I desire God and allow Him to have His way with me will directly impact the degree to which I abhor the things to distract or detract from that goal. So I pray that we would be people that love deeply and that that we hate evil, those things that detract, things that aren't good for us, that aren't good for our neighbors, that aren't good for our God. Father, thank You for Your word. Thank You that You are good. There is no shadow in You. There's no darkness. You are excellent. And God, thank You that You love us. Your laws aren't arbitrary. You don't just make this stuff up because it's because, but it's for our good because You love us. You're a God of love. You are love, and we thank You. Help us to love well. Help us to love our enemies. Help us to hate the things that detract from Your glory. Help us to hate the things that keep us from all that You have for us. So thank You for Your word. Amen.